This Torah class is brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.
Okay, welcome everybody. Welcome all our Torah Anytime viewers. We are on the third and final part. Did I say final part last time?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so this is really the final part. The reason is because I wanted to do Guarding Your Eyes, a completely separate class. I figured I'll do it in the summer. It's you know, more apropos. And then I realized, wait, we live in New York, which is, it doesn't matter if it's minus 1,000, girls are going to try really hard to make sure that they are immodest. So this is something, guarding the eyes is something that you need all throughout the time. And just the way the schedule worked, I figured might as well get the, yeah, you know, it's really strongly connected to the class that we spoke earlier about wasting seed. Because it's you know, they're really partners, these two classes. So this is the third class we'll do on guarding your eyes. This is something of utmost importance. This, everybody, every single person that walks out in the street has issues with this. Everybody has issues with this. This is not something, and granted, true, some people have more than others, but just by walking in the street, there's so many scenes that are coming in your way. There are billboards, there are, you know, immodest woman dressed, there are, you know, just scenes that play themselves in itself is a problem. Even more so those that watch TV, watch movies, or read these magazines, and all that thing that puts it all of the more so on steroids. So this is something that is of extreme importance. I cannot, you know, emphasize this enough, and we'll try to show the importance of this topic. This is a standalone topic, just how you have to guard your eyes and make sure that you don't look at forbidden images, and what that does to you and your soul, your mind, your thoughts. So, nowadays, besides all the difficulties we have to deal with in the outside world, we also have now in our homes, unfortunately, people that have smartphones, tablets, computers, all these things, they have access to these things right on the phone. And even if you're doing something as simple as reading the news, you know, if you're doing it from a non-kosher, you know, source, you're going to have ads, you're going to have, you know, these scenes that pop up. And unfortunately, you know, people violate things without even realizing they're violating it. This violation is actually from the Torah. It is in the Torah. It says in the Bamidbar, in Numbers, chapter 15, verse 39, do not stray after your hearts and after your eyes. What the Gemara explains, and the Gemara in Brachot explains, that after your hearts, you know what after your hearts means? That means atheist. Don't become an atheist. Don't go after your heart, an atheist. And don't stray after your eyes. That means don't go after immoral things that don't look proper, that what you would look at. And by the way, the halacha is, the Shulchan Aruch brings it down, that you're not allowed to even look at women that are modestly dressed. You're not supposed to be looking at women. It's just like a period thing. People think, okay, she's modest, what's the problem? If you know when you're allowed to? When you're dating her, thinking about you're going to get married. That's when you're allowed to look at her. But other than that, you're on business, you're on that, you have absolutely zero right, nor, not only do you don't have a right, it's actually a sin to go and derive benefit from somebody else's, from another woman's, beauty. The majority of people, unfortunately, think that this is only for the righteous people. Be like, okay, fine, the righteous people, they don't look at it because it's on their level. This is something that should be on everybody's level. And really, it's a very, very hard thing to grasp, especially if you're in the real world and you're dealing, and you're, especially if you're in Manhattan, you're walking over there and you're and you have all the, you know, you have customers coming in, you're dealing with this client and this client, you know. Even now, the dress code for the city dress code is so immodest that you can't even, like, there's some businesses that say, okay, no, they have to have a modest dress code. But even that is not even close to what a halakha requires. So you're always going to be surrounded by this thing, and it's unfortunately it's somebody thing that many, many people stumble upon, and many people don't know the severity of it. And that is really the goal for tonight, to realize the severity and realize that it's very doable. It's not easy, but it's very doable to overcome in this scenario. And there, you know, I heard from Rabbi and Dr. Twersky. I went to visit my wife's grandmother, and she was like, oh, did you hear this clip from this? I'm like, no, what is the clip about? And she said, you know, it has to be about, you know, looking at improper websites. I'm like, I'm giving a class on that tomorrow. Can you, like, send that to me? And so she sent that to me, and it's something very, very interesting what he says. So he says that he's a psychiatrist, and he deals with addictions. That's what his, especially for, like, I don't know, 40 years or something. So he knows what he's talking about. He wrote books on the Torah. He's very well versed in both fields, in the science and in the Torah. And he says that if you have a pop-up that comes up, and it's an immodest pop-up, you have not even like a, I forgot the time frame, but I think it was like a percentage of a second that you could exit out. But if you don't exit out, that's it, you're already hooked on. You're already addicted. You'd like, if you don't do it right then and there, that's it, you're done. And it's so true, because you, once you get it in, it's in your mind. And it's in your mind that you plan it out, be like, what if, maybe, if I, no, I'm just checking something else. I think I saw, you know, weather in the top right corner. I want to just check the weather. You know, like people convince themselves the silliest things. So, a big problem is people think like, what's the big deal? Like, really, what's the big deal? You know, I'm looking, no touching. You know, that's what they tell me. It's only eye candy. I've heard the new terminology. That's not so new to me. I heard it already a while ago. But, it's a thing called eye candy, where you look at things that you don't touch. So it's candy for your eye. It might be candies for your eyes, but it's poison for your soul. So think of it as rat poison for your soul. Yeah, this would be a better phraseology for it. So there are people who say, like, what's the big deal? I'm looking, I'm not touching, I'm not doing anything. I'm not doing anything. What's wrong with just looking? The Rambam, Maimonides, in Hilchot Tshuva says that somebody who looks at women makes it very, very difficult for someone to do tshuva. You know why? Why does it make it difficult to do tshuva? Because when you look at women, that's what you think. You think, what? I didn't do anything wrong. What did I do wrong? I didn't touch her. I didn't have relations with her. I didn't even speak to her. So what did I do wrong? If you think that you're not doing anything wrong, you'll never do tshuva. You want to look this up? This is in Rambam Hilchot Tshuva, chapter 4, the Mishnah 4 over there. The fourth section. The Rambam says also that even if you look at a small finger of a woman in order to derive pleasure, that's already a sin in itself. The severity of it is very, very severe, and it's so much so that even people that grew up religious be like, "Come on, how is this? You know, like how do you expect to live like this way?" So the Ramchal says like this. He says that When it's dark outside, when it's night, and you can't really see, so there's two things that sort of come out. Number one, you cannot see something, so you could stumble at something, you could trip over at something. What does that mean? That means in the spiritual realm that we fail to realize certain behaviors are against halakha. We're in this like dark world, and we don't realize this is a problem. Number two, in the dark, when you see something, it might look like something else. You're like walking in the street, and it's like in the dark, you're passing through the, I don't know, you're walking through the park because you're not smart, and at night, and you go through the park, and you see like there is like, you know, a shadow, and then all of a sudden you're there alone, it's like midnight, and you're just like walking through there, and all of a sudden you see like a shadow go by, and you're like, was that, those just bushes, right? But now you're like on panic mode, so every time you hear like a, you know, like a thing, you're like in like Kung Fu style, you know, the second someone turns around, you know, you're like, you know, all that. And then you start seeing things, but you see things that you're like, okay, you for sure think that there's someone there in the distance. And as you get closer, you realize, no, it was just like a garbage can and the wind was blowing. And really, you thought there was like a guy crouching behind the, you know, the garbage can, and he was there to take all your money and your, and you know, and anything else that you possibly might have on you. So the idea is that you see things that are not there, and that is the idea in the spiritual world also. We're in this dark place, so you start rationalizing by saying that's not really a sin. Like you think, no, it's not really a sin. Is that a guy? That's not a guy in the dark. You sort of the whole thing becomes clouded, and you're not really sure on you know what goes on, what's not, and then you end up convincing yourself that it's not a problem. It says in Chok Yisrael, he says that when people look at women that are forbidden to them, this image becomes stuck to your mind. Its image becomes so much stuck to your mind that the evil inclination, like, it got you. It's like, you know, you could have the worst memory, but you look at something bad, like, forget, you will never forget this scene. Like, you're never going to forget this picture. You could be like 100 years old, you don't remember, you know, your telephone number that you used for the past 75 years, but like, all of a sudden, one time when you were a teenager, you looked at something and that pops into your mind. Be like, are you serious? He can't remember his last four digits of the social security number, but he can remember that things. You know why? Because the Satan constantly throws these images back into your thought, and so much so that some people they'll be, let's say, praying, and all of a sudden a certain thought pops into the head or whatever it is, and you think, okay, you know, it was involuntary. I didn't cause that. I didn't want the thought to come in there, and they think they're completely innocent. But really, says the Holy Son, no. Says that person is an absolute sinner. Because he looked at something, and that's why the thought came into the head. So these things come in. You don't realize that the idea behind you know, watching our eyes is something that very much internalizes, which is very interesting. Because if you think about it, what would you think would be worse for a man to look? And by the way, this is very important what I'm about to say, and I should have even started over this. What would be worse, for a man to look at a dirty image or for a woman to look at a dirty image? You would think a man. Most people would answer what? You know, a man, because man has a problem of, you know, that issues that come out of that, a wasting seed and things like that. So, but I've heard an interpretation that says no. woman is worse? Why is a woman who looks at the, and not that makes men any better whatsoever, it's extremely, extremely bad. But what the problem is with women is women internalize things. You know, they get very emotionally connected to things. So they'll look at a picture, and or they'll look at it, they'll see a story, they'll read a book, they'll watch a movie, whatever it is. They do these things, and all of a sudden they get attached to that. So a man sees a picture, it's going to get stuck into his head, in his mind. It's going to get attached to him, but there's not going to be an emotional attach. He's not going to be like, well, I wonder what happened after he came to visit her. Did their relationship grow on to be a good, successful relationship? Or was it something that, the guy's like, no, you know, it's finished, it's done. But a woman is going to be like, well, you know, what happened? You know, like, I want to know more of the story. I want to know more of the situation, what goes on. She gets more involved in it. So this class is, even though guarding your eyes, you think of it mostly for women, for men, it's very strongly related to women. And this is a very, very big problem nowadays, is that people think that a woman doesn't need to. Remember, I once spoke to a couple, and they used to watch movies together. So I said, you know, what do you do if there's a bad scene? She's like, oh, don't worry about it. The woman says, I cover his eyes. You know? So I'm like, you know, thank you, RoboCop, but what about you? He says, what do you do? You know, it's also a problem for you. What makes you think you're allowed to look at these things? And it stays, these images stay on a person. It's a very big, it's a very serious issue. So this, guarding your eyes, is not only for women, it's also for men. Even another reason why it's so important for women is if a woman goes and looks at another man, the first thing that the man thinks, I have a chance with her. She wants me. You know what? No. Let's rephrase it. She needs me. You know, if she would be able to marry, she would marry. You know how guys' egos are? Be like, yo, bro, you saw that? I'd be like, what are you talking about? She was looking at me. I was like, what are you talking about? She was looking at me. You know, guys have, you know, even though like a lot of guys can have a low self-esteem, but if a girl just like looks at him, they're like, that's it. You know, the case is closed. And granted, the woman could be nothing to do with that person. You know, she thought she saw her friend right behind you, and you know, she was just looking at that, or she just happened to be spacing out and just looking in your direction. But so the problem is that when a woman goes and starts looking and staring at other guys start getting ideas themselves. So it works for both ways. If a guy stares at a woman, usually it's like, oh, this guy's a jerk, a creep. What is he doing? Stop looking at me. But on the other way around, you know, a girl looks at a guy, be like, oh, you know. See, I told you this suit was worth $7,000, you know? So, anyways, moving on. That, you know, some people, they go and they, you know, look at the woman and, you know, I had a guy once, this is when I was single, so one of my friends, he bought sunglasses. You know sunglasses that they're so, it's like the one of those glasses that, like, the mirror's on the inside, you know? Like, you can't see anything. It's like, you cannot see, like, there's nothing penetrating that. So I'm like, dude, you can't see anything. Why are you buying that? So he's like, check it out. He says, where am I looking right now? I'm like, I don't know. I see myself only. This is seriously like a solid mirror that you have. He's like, exactly. He's like, I could check out anybody and no one will know. Not that I'm giving you any ideas, chas v'shalom, but... I don't want to give our viewers ideas, but this is a terrible thing. And in my mind, so he's thinking he's not doing anything wrong because she doesn't know that he's looking at her. And this one doesn't know he's looking at her. But really what's happening, he's looking at her and he thinks he's not doing anything wrong. He thinks everything is okay, but God knows everything. Says Kohelet. It says Kohelet in chapter 12, verse 14, that God will judge every single deed, even that it's hidden. Even that's hidden, that only you knows, God is going to judge you for that. So it's something that even if you don't, if you think nobody else knows, nobody else is that. As are people, you know, they feel like they could steer when, you know, when people are not looking. Whatever the odd, you know, mathematical equation that goes onto the head that brings them to this answer is a very serious thing, regardless if someone sees it, regardless if someone doesn't see it. God knows in the privacy of your home, and God knows outside as well. And this is a very, very serious sin. And the Chok Lisol also brings down that some the sins of the youth, because a lot of the sin is very common for the younger population. Not that it's any less common for the older population, but it's something that is common in the younger population. And he says that the sins of youth, they should cause people to tremble and fear, like with all the sins that they committed during that time. And there's something very, very interesting. The first sin in the Torah, you look at the first sin in the Torah, the sin with the tree, right? With the Et Hadas, you know, Chava, Adam, and the Nachash. So first the snake goes and tells Chava, listen, eat from the tree, you're going to get wisdom, you're going to get knowledge, it's going to be amazing. And it enticed her. She's like, okay, that sounds interesting, but she still didn't want to do it. When did she do it? When was the urge that caused her to actually go and commit the sin? If you look at Genesis chapter 3, verse 6, it says, "V'tira ha'isha ki tov ha'etz le'ma'achal v'chi ta'ava hu le'enayim." She saw it and says, oh, it's good for the eyes. She saw it with her eyes, and all of a sudden, you know, the eye sees, the heart desires, and the rest is history. So, this is the power of the vision. The power of the vision was, until she saw it, she didn't see it, it didn't cause her that oh, I need to have it. Once she saw it, that's when the sin took place. And you look throughout, you know, let's go through a few quick scenarios. Cain, he saw that they both brought korbanot, they both brought sacrifices. He saw that one got answered over the other. Oh, all of a sudden he got jealous. What happened? He ended up murdering his brother. Acham. Ham saw his father naked, and what happened? He was unclothed, and he disgraced him. Lot, when he was going to separate from Avraham, he saw the fertile ground of Sodom, how amazing it was over there. So he left over there to live with the wicked people. Avimelech saw how beautiful Sarah was, and he took her away from Avraham. Yosef's brothers, they saw that Yaakov made a special coat for Yosef. So they were like, oh God, they became very jealous, and then the rest they sold them, and that greatly resulted in splitting the family apart, as well as hurting Yaakov very, very much. So you have over here a lot of sins that begin with the eyes. The eyes is the beginning of the sin. The issue is, and this is where people come and they ask, listen, it's very difficult. I walk in the street, how am I not going to look at a what? Like, it just happens. And the issue with that is there's no issue with the first look. And I have to be very clear. The first look does not mean like that, where you just like steer for like seven Mississippis, you don't stop. The first look means like, oh, you accidentally saw something, you look away. That does, you don't get punished for that, unless you're in a place that you shouldn't be there. But if you just happen to go, it's like one instant, one instant look, that there's no punishment. Where's the punishment? The second look. Or that extra long steer. The extra, I had I remember this. This is when I was single. I was speaking to a guy. I didn't want to say where it's in front of. It was a kosher place, but I'm saying it was staying outside. It was on Coney Island, actually. But, I won't tell you the exact place. And we were talking. And I wasn't talking. He was talking. And he was talking to me. We were schmoozing about a certain, idea. And there was a person of the opposite gender that, strolled past by. And he's, I don't know if you ever had this conversation, but so I'm listening to him, and all of a sudden, he stops talking. And I'm like, I'm not waiting. And he was the motion. He just slowly moved his head, and we were talking, and it was it was the longest 10 seconds of my life. I was like, are you serious? And then he looks back at me, and he's like, well, I'm like, I said nothing. And you are Mel talking. You just stopped. What were we talking about? I'm like, you have a problem, right? You know that, right? He's like, well, what was wrong? He's like, I'm like, you, like, we were like in a deep conversation about something, and you couldn't even, you, like, a girl walked past by, and that's it. He went in it. And this is such a big problem, because in his mind, he didn't do anything wrong. He didn't see it. He didn't even realize it. That's how bad it is. You don't even realize. You know how many times, now, if, people are talking to me, it's outside. And, so they're talking to me, let's say, after a class, and they're asking me questions. And as if, I can't tell that a woman walks past by, and where they're like, and it's like the speech starts slowing down. I'm like, what are you, are you inspecting to see if she stole money from a price tag? What are you looking for? Like, what do you get? Like, if you think about it, I understand it's a very hard temptation. I really do understand it. We live in a very, very difficult time, and I'm not downplaying it. But if you think about it psychologically, what are you doing? What are you gaining from it? You're like, are you going to be tested later on what you wore? What do you need to have all this information? It doesn't help you. So the problem is the people do this, they don't even realize they're doing anything wrong. It's so second nature to people, unfortunately, that it's like, okay, it doesn't even faze them. And that's a very big problem. The Rambam says, you're not going to do tshuva on that because you don't think that you're doing anything bad. And these type of people, their mind is always clouded with these images. There was, then you have people that says, it doesn't affect me. So I'll tell you, I'll share with you a story I read recently. Rav Eliyahu Lapian, he taught Torah for over 70 years, in Europe, in Israel. He was very, very well versed in the Torah, very, very big Talmid Chacham, big Tzaddik. And one of his students came over to him and asked him, he said, listen, I have a wedding tonight, but it's not going to be such a modest wedding. I want to know if I'm able to go. good student, asking a nice question, very nice. So far, so good. So he said, so the rabbi replied back to him, says, so what are you going to do about the immodesty? So the student said, it doesn't really affect me. The rabbi didn't respond. He took out a tehillim, and he started praying. And the students, you know, was like very respectful, was like waiting, and as the, and you know, he's like, Rabbi, you know, what are you doing? So the teacher, you know, pauses, and he says, I'm 86 years old, the teacher tells him, blind in one eye, and I'm still affected by human nature. You're young, you're prime of your life, and you're not affected by human nature, you must be sick, so I'm praying for you today, I have a speedy recovery. So people who say that this doesn't bother them, they must be sick. I've had people that tell me that they're able to look at the worst of the worst, doesn't affect them. I say, you have a problem, and you have a serious problem. If it doesn't affect you, that's a very, very big problem. Of course it affects you, you just don't know it. When you're so much in the garbage, you don't smell the garbage anymore. You become used to the garbage. You go in a perfume store, the second you walk in there, you're gagging. It's like, you know, like, especially if the first section is, you know, you have like the Russian, there's like sections, like Russian mothers, you know, they hang around on this side, you know, this side, you know, and then you got, you know, the other stuff, you know, on this side, the Persian, yeah, you got Persian guy, you know, like everyone has their own scent that they like, you know, if you go like past these scents, you're like, you can't breathe. But if you hang out in the perfume store for like, and nothing against Russian mothers, by the way, I don't know why I said that as the first one, but because you know, like sometimes, and I'm not calling out Russians, Chas v'Shalom, they're great people. Putin is my friend. I'm just kidding. You know, so you know how they say, like, oh no, it's okay. I'm allowed to talk about them because I know Russian people. Yeah. So he goes, thank you very much. If you could please, thank you. So he goes and he said, and well, no, I'm in a different story. So in my mind, I'm somewhere else. But you go into these places. Thank you. That you get so much enveloped in the smell that eventually it doesn't affect you anymore. I'll give you a proof. So you have cologne. You have, you know, a woman who wears perfume. They wear the perfume. The more they wear it, they stop smelling it. The first time they're like, "Ooh, this smells so good." But eventually, the more they put it on, as they keep it on, they don't even realize they're wearing it because your nose desensitizes to it. The problem is that nobody else is desensitized to it. So you're putting on a half a bottle. You're walking in the street. You know, the guys are like, you know, they're following the scent, which is a very big sin as itself. You also have to be careful of the modesties. Also have to,
Yeah, a lot of women walk past by me, and it's like,
you smell them from like a block away.
Wow.
You smell them from a block away. Yeah.
They think it doesn't affect you, but the guy is,
yeah, bigger. Listen, there's a reason why people pay $80, $100 or whatever more for a perfume bottle. You know?
It's chemicals.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's a very serious thing, but you realize, if you think about it, when you spray yourself a lot with this, you don't even smell it anymore because you become desensitized. Somebody who's always in the filth, always looking at these dirty things, always looking at things they don't even think is dirty, they're not going to feel that they're affected by it, but oh, they are getting affected by it. Even somebody that's been in it, every little extra picture, every little extra clip does a damage to your soul. And it says in Sefer Chasidim that If somebody's, you know, you know where people get a test? So let's say they go, you go to a place which, you know, we'll speak about, you know, people go to weddings, and weddings is not always so modest. And even if it is modest, but you have a bunch of guys, and this is also, I have a very hard time understanding it. The guys, they go, and they stand with their, you know, open bar cocktails, and they just look. They just enjoy the scenery. And they're like, yeah, you know, and they point, and this, and that. And I'm like, they don't even realize that this is a sin. They don't even realize it. But let's say you're with those guys. You're with the guys. You know what the test is? That you're not going to look and they are going to look. That's going to have to show your level of kiddushah. And a person should know that if you're doing something, you should never, ever, ever be embarrassed to do something right. Never. Never be embarrassed. In fact, the reward is so much greater when you're doing it in defiance. I'm not saying go in their faces, you know, and say it. Like, you know, sometimes you can't, you know, you're going to tell them, hey, what are you looking at? Be like, mind your own business, you know? So it's not something that you could always, if you can, of course, give chizuk for that. But, you know, these are things that you have to, you know, we're constantly getting tested on it. And in fact, let's say the Talmud Yerushalmi says that, let's say you have to go to a wedding. But you know this wedding is not going to be modest. The Talmud Yerushalmi, it brings it down in Sefer Chasidim that it's better not to go to the wedding. It's better not to go to the wedding because it's a mitzvah to go to the wedding. But a mitzvah, a good deed that brings a bad act, is better not to do it. So if you're going to go do something and you're saying it's a big mitzvah, but it's going to be a problem, it's going to sin that's going to come out of it, better that you don't do it. And this is, you know, weddings is a whole thing in itself, and I don't want to get into it because we're going to be stuck on it for a long time. But it's a very serious problem nowadays. It's a very serious problem. You know, like, you know, I speak to people that are getting married. We try to get them, but, you know, Baruch Hashem, we've been getting them to do separate dancing, at least separate, you know, separate dancing. Even though the, you know, I don't know what you call the mechitza, the plants, you know, there's like, you know, in itself doesn't even count, but at least we know we're getting somewhere. But even if you have separate dancing, you still have the guys and girls are mingling together. You know, even if the girls are you know, dressed to tsniut, it's still, you're not allowed to look at them. You're not allowed to look at them. People do not realize the severity of the sin. They don't even, forget about the severity, they don't realize that it's a problem. They just don't realize it's a problem.
See the mixed wedding that collapsed in Israel? The ground was under them. It was
really?
Three stories, and everybody got sucked in. And...
Wow.
Yeah.
A lot of injuries, deaths, and
that? A lot of deaths.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, thousands of deaths.
It's terrible. I'm telling you, it's terrible. You know, listen, we shouldn't know. We shouldn't know from these things. There was once. You know, these things also tear up families. There was once a man who, you know, went up to yeshiva, grew up religious, and he started having a problem with looking at websites that are not to be looked at. And after a while, his wife found out. His wife caught him, or I don't know how she found out, but she found out, and she was so, you know. No woman, no matter how like modern she is or whatever it is not going to be like, oh, cool, yeah, have fun, honey. You know, like, it's not somebody that think that a woman is, and she was revolted by it, which is a general idea of how a woman should feel when they hear a man does this. So they, you know, she started getting so revolted by it, and she was like, you know, you need, you know, like, stop doing it. And he couldn't stop. So he went into counseling. And eventually, you know, the counseling also failed. He refused to listen to that. And to make matters worse, he slowly started becoming less religious. Stopped going to shul. Stopped, you know, caring about the children's education, Torah education. Didn't really bother him. To a certain point that his wife said, listen, like, you know, we're not compatible anymore. It's not. And they ended the marriage because of that. And, you know, it's people don't realize when they get sucked into this thing, it's an addiction. People get seriously addicted to this type of thing. It's extremely revolting. You know, if God forbid you ever have a temptation of it, some of the easiest ways to like just go over it is just imagine your wife, if you're not married yet, your future wife, you know, she's right over there, she's like, oh, what you doing honey, and be like, checking to see, you know, what new classes on Torah Anytime came on, you know, and all of a sudden, you know, so if you think about that it's, you know, how it's so embarrassing that no man would want to do that, but it's revolting to, if you think about it like that way, hopefully that would be able to convince you to stay away from these type of websites and other forms of entertainment of this sort. There's a story with Alexander the Great. Alexander the Great was one time traveling, and he stopped by a spring because he wanted to eat. He had some salted fish, so he wanted to, you know, wash the fish. So there's two opinions: either it came out an amazing smell, or there's an opinion that says also that the fish became alive when he washed in this river. So he was like, oh, he's like, this river is something special. So he says this river must come from heaven, must come from Gan Eden. So he followed the trail. And he came to the source of the spring, and he saw it was the entrance to Gan Eden. And he says, open up. He says, it's Alexander the Great. I don't know if he called himself the Great. He says, you know, it's the Great, last name, first name Alexander. And he goes, and they say, no, only righteous people enter here. He's like, no, come on, you know who I am? Do you know who I am? I can't, you know, majority of the world is under my rule. I'm a king. So they would refuse to let him in. So they said, okay, fine. Give me, you know, a good magnet. I say, you know, bend the gun at them. Give me something I can take. So they gave him an eyeball. He took this eyeball, and he weighed it to see how heavy it is. And all the gold and all the silver that he held, have the eyeball outweighed it. And he called the rabbi. He says, I don't understand what's going on over here. How is this little eyeball weigh more than all the riches that I have? So they said, no, listen, they check this out. They took a bunch of dirt, of sand, and they covered the eyeball. Meanwhile, the eyeball went up and, you know, didn't weigh anything anymore. He says, well, you know, he says, what's going on with that? So they answer, the rabbis answered that a person always, you know, uses his eyes to look for more and more and more. He always wants more. And if he always wants more, he's never going to be satisfied. You know when he's going to be finally satisfied? Well, not going to be satisfied. He's not going to have a choice when he's going to have some dirt on him, when he's going to be 6 feet under. He says, so they were telling Alexander the Great, said, listen, you were great. You were conquered. Most of the world is under your rule. You had everything that you did. But however, the one thing that you couldn't conquer is your own eyes. You couldn't. He was always striving after his desires and pleasures and all those things. He couldn't conquer his own eyesight. He says, someone like that, you can't enter Gan Eden. He says, you can only enter Gan Eden only as a righteous person. I want to share with you something that I mentioned this, I don't know, maybe a year and a half ago or something like that. So I'm not going to go through the whole story of it, but this is something that I feel so, so important of it. So I'll bring you, it was a class I gave called How to Make Your Spouse More Beautiful Without Plastic Surgery. Great class. So the Over there, I spoke a lot about the, something over here, and I want to bring some points, and I'm bringing very short. But if you are interested in that, you can go look up in those in that particular class. Also, very important for guarding your eyes. Imagine this scenario: you go and you get stranded on an island full of 200 Jews, and there's a bunch of young people. You're a single guy. There's a bunch of single girls, and there's a shatran. You get stranded on the island. You realize you're not coming out there. Long story short, you decide to build a life over there. The shatran comes to you because you're the best guy, obviously, because it's you, and you're the number one in the island. They say, listen, all the girls love you, of course, because it's you, and that's just normal. And they say, listen, you get all the girls want you get the first pick. Who do you want? And he said he knew there was one girl that like outshone everybody else. Like it wasn't even a question. It was like okay, it wasn't even a question. It was like that girl. So they were like, okay, fine. Yeah, they went. They started dating. They hit it off. Everything was amazing. Mazal tov. They had a shidduch. And they had a wedding on the island, wedding of a dream on the island, and a beachfront wedding. Everything was great. The marriage was great. You literally, guarding your eyes was the easiest thing because, everybody else there compared to her. And all of a sudden, a few years go by, and you get rescued. They realize that there's a rescue team that passes by, sees you, and they bring you all back to the States. You get back to the States, and you reunite together with your family, and you show the new kids, and everything is amazing. First few months is bliss. But eventually, you have to get back into the real world, and you start working. And you start walking in Manhattan, and you realize, you'd be like, in your mind, your wife was always the most beautiful woman that you have ever seen, because that's all the most beautiful woman that you had. But all of a sudden, here you have so many more options that it makes her look like a rat with makeup, and she's all of a sudden you're not thinking that, but subconsciously you're like I didn't get the best deal that I think I got, that I think that I thought that I got originally. So eventually, this sort of subconsciously settles in, and you guys start having petty fights, you and your spouse, and then it gets more and it gets worse, and then you're like, what's going on? Where did it go wrong? And this lies the biggest secret, if you ask me, I think one of the largest, biggest secrets in marriage. I want to say one of, because, but I think this is the number one. The number one secret in marriage is when you feel that you didn't get the best end of the deal anymore, you're done. But if you, you felt like, okay, wait a minute, beforehand, I got the most prettiest girl. So everything is amazing, everything is unbelievable. But right now, all of a sudden, you see like, oh, there's so many more options. You're like, okay, I didn't get as much as I did. And you start treating her that way. If you think, oh my God, she could get so many much better options than me, then you're always trying to make her happy. You don't want to do anything wrong because you don't want to mess her up. You just want her to stay always happy and stay with you. So that is the secret of marriage. The secret of marriage is always realizing that you got the better end of the deal, that you're the lucky one and not her. And when you don't guard your eyes, you start realizing that you don't think you're that lucky anymore. And this is so important. So we spoke a little bit about the severity of guarding your eyes. Here's where I'm telling you, forget about the next world. Right here, it's going to cause you. Right here, it's going to cause your problem. If you guard your eyes, you're going to have a better marriage. You're going to be more attracted to your wife. You're going to be more, everything is just going to be so much more happier. When you go and let your eyes wander, then forget about it. You're going to lose the next world and you're going to lose this world. This is all the more so is if you're not looking, if you look at magazines, at TV, at movies, at all these things, at websites, it's going to take away from your marriage. It's going to take away so much. And I can't say this, the people that speak to me that they look at these websites and they're not attracted to their wives anymore. They say they have to look at this website just to get attracted to their wife. I'm like, you don't make sense. You're like, that makes absolutely no sense to me. But whatever, they're so involved in it, they can't understand anything else. But this is something that is very serious. You want a happy marriage? You want a happy life? I hold that very strong. Happy wife, happy life. That's very, very true. If you're happy, it doesn't matter. You could have money, you could have everything. But if you have a miserable marriage, your life is in the dumps. This is something that I hold very strongly with. So if you want to increase your attractiveness to your wife, you want your wife to be more attractive, you guard your eyes. Watch what you look. The idea is that even if you marry Miss Universe, and everybody should marry the Miss Universe in their own eyes. Amen. So, unless you don't want, whatever, it's up to you. So, but what happens is that if you don't watch your eyes, there's always going to be a different type of beauty. You like curly hair, this is going to be straight hair. Dark is light. There's always blue eyes, brown eyes. There's always changes, and people always like different. This is something that is very innate quality in the human nature. We always want to upgrade. We always want to upgrade. So if you're looking at things that you're not supposed to be looking at, you're going to be like, even though somebody is not as pretty as their wife, you have these, you know, I remember growing up when you have in the news where like this movie star cheated on with somebody else. And you look, it's not even close to the, you know, how pretty his wife was. It's like, what was he doing? Answer is it's different. When you don't watch your eyes, all you care about is something else, something different, something new, and you end up falling so hard, so fast, and so strong. So there's another idea that is very, very important to mention, and it's talking about measuring. Everybody has a meter. Everybody has a meter of how much pleasure they're supposed to get. You are going to get that pleasure one way or the other. The question is, are you going to take it illegally or are you going to take it legally? And this is very much in association with what we just said. You have a certain amount of pleasure that you're going to have, let's say, in the sexual realm. If you take it illegally, it's the same pleasure that you're going to get later with your kosher wife in the kosher manner, and it's going to be a mitzvah. But you're going to take it out illegally, you're stealing from yourself. Think of it, the idea that I gave an example before is if somebody goes and steals $10 million. You go steal $10 million, you have a great life, whatever, everything is amazing and unbelievable. You're always running away from the cops, so you're not really, you know, always looking over your shoulder, and you figure you'll pay for it in the next world. You ended up paying for it in this world and the next world because you can't, you can't really enjoy the money when you're always looking over your shoulder. So you go and you make the money. You're on your deathbed. You know what? So at least I made some money. At least, and you get up there. You know what the bigger kicker is? God's gonna tell you, be like, $10 million. You think you could take something that doesn't belong to you? You're gonna get that money anyways. That was coming to you. You are gonna make that money. The problem is you took it illegally. You know what a biggest kick that is? It says, I was going to make that money and I would have enjoyed this world and the next world. Now you didn't enjoy this world and the next world. This is the same idea. When you go and when you sin with your eyes or with anything in the Tava, in the realm of the Brit, you're stealing from yourself. You're stealing away from yourself from the future. You're going to pay for it in this world and you're going to pay for it in the next world. It just doesn't pay. And we realize that one of the hardest things nowadays for most men is this sin. Is this sin. Now if you think about it, if this sin is not such a big deal, why does the Satan try so hard? Must be that it's such a big deal that he's pushing it in so hard. It must be that this is something so important and something that if you capture this, it's going to be very, very bad news for him. So he tries very, very hard to make you fall in this sin. This is why Bilam knew this. And Bilam, when he wasn't able to curse, he wasn't able to do anything, what did he say? He said, you know what? He says, you know how you're going to get the Jews? Get them to sin with the woman. Because once they got sin, and once they sinned with the woman, they, you know, it was an epidemic, many, many deaths. This is, you know, this is very, very unfortunate that, you know, in nowadays and age, that this thing comes to the stage that we are at, that, you know, it's normal for people to talk about this. It's like, you know, people don't even think about it. You know, if you have like a good businessman, he's in his business and he suffers a loss. He's going to do whatever he can if he's smart to prevent that same loss from happening. Yet you have people that they go, they know they shouldn't be looking at these things. And they go and they mess it up, but then they don't put any precaution not to do it. They're home alone, and they're on their phone, whatever it is, and they go to websites that they shouldn't be going to, and then they don't put any precaution. You don't put like, you know, there's so many websites that you could go, it's applications that prevent you from looking at, It's like, there's one called Tag, if I'm not mistaken. There's a very good one called WebHover. You could also break your phone. That's another option. There's something called WebHover. The WebHover is really great. Because what's good about WebHover is that, let's say you need to have access to the entire internet. You can't filter your phone. You set up somebody who you're really close with and you really hold high of. They get a list of all your websites you ever visited to. So you have full access, but they get a list of everything you listen to. So you're going to feel bad if all of a sudden, you know, there's going to be some websites that come up that are not so clean. You're going to be embarrassed because, you know, your rabbi, your grandmother, I don't know, whoever you want to you know, is going to be looking at your wife. You know, who's going to be looking at these things. So it's something that you should, I think it's a fantastic idea, and I strongly recommend everybody to do it. What?
Dangerous.
Why is it dangerous?
What if a guy was really nuts in his teva, and he's like, I don't know if we do it.
If he doesn't care, I mean, it's a precaution. The best thing to do is get a filter. That's really the best thing, a filter. But if you, let's say you can't have a filter, whatever it is, that's the best best is to destroy the phone. Get a kosher phone. But if you can, if you need to have it for whatever reason, then at least get a filter. If you can get a filter, at least you can do WebHover, because that doesn't hinder any of your performance. It doesn't hinder anything, but it's going to prevent you from doing it. Somebody who has, by the way, this is something very important. You have the ability to do that, and you don't do that, just know that you have a problem. You have a problem, and you just don't want to, like, no way, but I look on YouTube sometimes, so I don't want my rabbi to know that I look on YouTube. Do me a favor. That's the last thing that you need to, I mean, it's actually something you do need to worry about. But I'm saying, but it's something that, you know, it's they make excuses for things that is not so. This is, I hold very strongly WebHover. I have, I get a list of people that I have to review. You know, and Baruch Hashem, it's really great. It's, you know, no issues. They really actually, you know, keep it up to it. So, the Sefer Chasidim goes and explains that, you know, there's three orifices, I guess you could say it, in the head, that there are protections for it. There's actually almost everything. But you have the eyes, God created eyelids. You have the mouth, God created the lips to close it. You have the ears, you have, you know, little pieces that you could stick inside to close that prevent doing it. There's a reason why God created the barriers. The barriers are there for a reason. You know, it's just interesting. Out of the highest of all the things are the eyes. It's the highest thing. It shows you the power, or the power of the eyes. The power, and we'll soon speak about how a blind person is considered like a dead man. He's not considered, you know, alive because of that, the importance that the eyes hold. In the Kaveh Yashal, in the second chapter, it says that there's a celestial being. And this celestial being, it entices human to go look at things that they shouldn't be looking at. And after that person dies, what this being goes, it goes and it goes in the grave, and it very kindly puts the soul back in, and then he bashes your eyes out. Like, literally breaks the bone and grabs the eyes and causes tremendous pain and suffering for this person that looked at things that they weren't supposed to look at. The Rabbi Yonatan Eibshitz said that, you know, the angel of death, we know the angel of death, how does it, you know, if you ever want to scare yourself, which is not always such a bad thing, is you start, you know, seeing what happens after a person dies. The angel of death is like a huge monstrosity of a being full of eyes. Just eyes everywhere. When I picture that, I'm like, oh, you know, like this is, you know, they're like blinking one different sizes. You know, it's like, it gets very, very, you know, scary. So you know where those eyes come from? Those eyes come from when you look at sins that you're not supposed to be, you're giving the angel of death another pair of eyes. This is how a person, when a person's about to die, he sees this huge, scary figure that he gets so scared, his mouth opens up, he sees the eyes. That's what he sees. He sees all the eyes, his mouth opens up, he gets scared. The angel of death puts a little drop under his tongue, and from that he dies. The fear, he opens his mouth and that's where the angel of death gets him. And where do these eyes come from? From looking at forbidden things. The Bet Yosef in Eben Ezra says that when a person looks at married women, he destroys the power of his good inclination. The power, and people, you know, it really bothers me. People have the, you know, the couple friends. They go, they hang out, and the, you know, and but sometimes it gets so severe. I don't even want to say some of the stories that you know, I've come across. You know, what happens, and then they hang out with the opposite spouse. It's terrible, terrible things that go in. Like, what are you doing? You have your spouse. No, he's too boring. I'm like, I've heard that before. Yeah, the spouse is too boring. They need to go. They only go out with couples. I'm like, your problem is not that your spouse is boring. Your problem is you need to go to marriage therapy because your marriage is not good. If there's something going on over here, but this is a very, very serious thing. The Zohar says like this, that there are people that don't, that they go to like where a person passes away and they follow the dead person to the cemetery, the mace. So people that are not careful, they look at women in that time. Even in that time, that's how much the desire goes and takes over people. That even when there's a dead person sitting right over there and you're carrying him over, you still can't control your eyes. Those are the people, and they look at women in that time as they are accompanying the mace to the cemetery. That causes many, many people in the world to die before the time. These things have tremendous, tremendous impacts. And it says that if you do overcome it, if you do overcome these things, you have the Torah just like opens up to you. If you overcome the sin of guarding your eyes, the world will be completely different to you. We'll skip a few things. It's getting a little bit late. This says something very interesting in Sefer Chasidim. It says that as long as a man does not do any sins, and he doesn't derive, specifically not deriving any pleasure from looking at immoral things, and he keeps his mind clear from immoral thoughts, he has a special image in the heavens that radiates. His image radiates. And when this image of his radiates, no demon, no destructive angel, no one can touch him. And where does the power come from? From guarding your eyes. But once his image doesn't radiate anymore, the angels of destruction, they have the ability to cause him harm. And that's where a lot of harm happens. You know, money, panasa, there's a lot of things that happens from you know, because of that. You know, there are sometimes that people are walking in the street and they say, no, you know, I need to look because I might know her. And, you know, it's very, you know, not nice if I don't know, you know, this is how the Yetzirah has great, 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 no, I'm just checking to see if I know her. And then you're still checking to see if you know her. And then you're still checking to see her. Maybe hopefully you'll get to know her. I'm like, you know, when does it actually stop? There's not something you have to worry about. If you're not able to control yourself and you have glasses, the best thing is walking the street, walk without glasses. You walk without glasses. And, you know, okay, so someone would be like, you know, if a woman is going to be walking past by and be like, she's going to get insulted that you didn't say hi to her, and she's not very close related to you, that's not a relationship that you should have anyways. So that's, you know, on a side note. But the evil inclination, the point is the evil inclination is going to go and make many, many excuses. No, you have to look. It's going to look bad. You want to get married? Maybe she's going to... This is the thing that I get all the time. No, we have to. I might, I'm a shidduchim. So you look at everybody like everyone's an open book for you? Like, how do you know? Maybe she's married. Like, what do you... People... You don't understand. People go to like weddings and they very confidently look into the other side and they point out the girls that they want to go date. And they're like, what are you picking out tomatoes over here? What do you mean? You're doing over there? When a girl comes to you and you have, that's when you look into her. Don't start looking around like as if you're, you know, the Mr. Billionaire that everyone's running after. I'd be like, no, please date me. Please date me. Pick me. Yeah, they're sitting over there, picking over there. You're causing yourself sins. You're convincing yourself that it's not a sin. That's an excuse for saying I can't marry people that are looking at it, you know. I'm just looking for my wife. Your wife is home. She didn't even come. Stop looking for your wife. You know, it doesn't, so people make, the point is people make excuses. And if you make excuses, you're not going to change. The evil inclination, I'll tell you this crazy story. The evil inclination does not have, if you control your eyes, the evil inclination doesn't have any power over that person. There's a story written in the Yalkut Shemoni in Parshat Vayechi, that there was a rabbi, I mean Matya, and he was always learning Torah. Always learning Torah. It says over here that his face resembled the sun, his appearance resembled that of the ministering angels, a very, very holy man. The Satan saw this tzaddik, and he says, listen, how is it possible this tzaddik never sinned? He goes and asks God, I want to test this thing. He went back and forth. No, fine. He went to go test this tzaddik. So the Satan goes and appears to him as a beautiful woman. And the tzaddik is going over there, sees a woman come over there, quickly turns the other way around. The satan instantly goes where the other person. So he goes, looks around another place. And again, the woman goes and appears in another place. He calls the student and says, go get me nails put them in fire. Get me fiery nails. So the student brings him the fiery nails, and he put them in his eyes. He blinded himself from that. So the satan got so scared of what happened. It literally says the satan fell back. And it's just like, you know, just booked. And God goes to the angel of healing, the angel of the file, and he says, go heal this tzaddik. So the angel comes in and he says, the rabbi says, who are you? And he says, I'm the angel of the file, I came to heal you. And he's like, no, what's done is done. It's better this way. So, and he wouldn't let him heal him. So the angel left, went back to God. God says, God, well?
Can't learn
Torah. He knew it by heart already. So he says that what you also you see on the power of guarding your eyes, it was worth it for him. So the angel goes back to God. God says, don't worry about it. I will personally guarantee that the evil inclination will have no more power over him. He heard that. He says, fine, you can heal me. He's a good negotiator. And but you see over here the power. You see over here the power that he was willing to forgo for not to avoid looking at sins. You know, not nowadays where people try to go look. They go and it's funny because I'll give classes, let's say, like people don't think that people realize how much they stare. Like, when we had, mixed, classes, boys and girls, and even though it was separate, some of the girls, and not over here, don't worry about it, not over here, the girls are like, they feel uncomfortable to come because the guys just stare. The guys stare all the time. And I don't know what it is that guys think, like, no one can see me. Like, I don't know if they think they have the invisibility cloak on, if that's what it is. But it's so, if they realize what other people are thinking, well, they'll be like, so it's so embarrassing. It's so embarrassing, the person. Besides the fact of the severity of the sin. Also, they say that one of the main enjoyments in the next world is through the eyes. The gazing on the Shekhinah, getting closer from Hashem. Whoever damages eyes in this world doesn't have the ability to get the full enjoyment in the next world. The Gemara in Baba Metzia, page 107, says like this. It says that almost all forms of death come because of the evil eye. And if you want an advice to save yourself from the evil eye, don't look at forbidden things. It's measure for measure. Just like if you don't look at forbidden things, the evil eye has no power over you. Just like Yosef. Yosef and his descendants, they merited that evil eye doesn't have any power over him. Why? Because he didn't, he perfected this particular character trait. The Sefer Chassidim also says that somebody who doesn't look at women, doesn't, you know, in this matter, occupies him in Torah and good deeds, he will be on the level of a ministering angel. You're talking about a real, extremely, extremely high level. There was once there's a Gemara in Tanit, page 21b, that there was a blood letter by the name of Abba the blood letter, and he received a divine greeting every single day. You know, think about like a good morning, you know, like every single day. And to tell you that, the level on it, Abaya, only once in every Erev Shabbat, got this divine greeting. Rava, only once every Erev Yom Kippur. So Abaya was discouraged. He says, I don't understand. He says, he's learning all day. This guy, he was a doctor. He was a blood letter. He was to let out blood. He says, why, you know, why is he so much higher? When they realized what this blood letter used to do, that when he would treat women, he would cover them with the sheets and only draw blood through the slit, so he doesn't see anything. And it's also, it's always, he's never looking at her, and it's always modest. That's number one. Number two, so first we see his modesty, how careful he was with his modesty. Number two, he placed his payment box, where you have to pay for him for his services, in a hidden place, so he can't see it. Says, if you have money, you pay. If you don't have money, you don't pay. He doesn't know who pays, doesn't know who doesn't pay. And lastly, the third thing that he did, that if a Torah scholar came, he would give him the service for free. And not only that, he would give them money so they could buy food, so they could heal better after bloodletting. So because of that, you see the level of righteousness that he reached because of those things that he did. And think about it. The first one was modesty. He was so careful of what he looked at. The Yael Dvash says that whoever looks at women, and this is including in TV the catalogs, whatever it is that they look at it, and enjoy themselves, then that the spirit of that image, when he passes away, goes and starts, you know, it hurts him, it haunts him, and causes power to him. There was a rabbi, it was a very righteous rabbi, who was very, very careful in guarding his eyes. And always. And one time, I think they lost a child or something like that. The child was abducted or something like that. And they went over to the rabbi. So the rabbi was quiet. And he took a pen and paper, and he started drawing a building. And then he's like concentrating, and he kept on drawing more details in it. And he says, the child is right over here, exactly in this place. And they went and they found him. They're like, you know, how is it possible? How did you know? So he responded. He says, one of the things that, you know, he says, I never look at improper images. The power that you have, if you don't look at improper images, that the world opens up to you like you have never seen it before. You'll have powers that Torah will open up for you like you've never seen before. The secrets of the universe open up. It's such a serious transgression. Just like it's so serious, the flip side shows the benefits for it. And I'll share with you some rewards that people have. Number one, if somebody guards his eyes, he's considered as if he offered all the sacrifices, because you're sacrificing it. You're preventing from looking at things that you want to look at. When you pray, God listens to your prayers and answers them in the time of need. The Chidah says this. The force of holiness and on his labor and everything, he gets like amazing kedusha and amazing siyata dishmaya, amazing atzlacha and blessing on everything that he does and for his descendants as well. He will also merit to sit among the most elevated in the future. He will also be merited to have good sons, and his sons will be righteous and live a long life. And not only that, the problems in the world in general do not come to those sons. The sons will also be able to author interpretations of the Torah. He will also keep his eyesight in his old age. The evil inclination has no power over him, and he merits sustenance, panasa, berevach, a tremendous amount of panasa. So look at the seriousness amount of the blessing, you know, of it. The Rabbi Leo Dessler brings down also, he says, you know how like you have genetic DNA. So if you have a certain problem, forget about how, let's say you have certain character traits, that could be passed down to your child, you know, through the DNA. That's physical DNA. Spiritual DNA could also be passed down. So if you work on something, it also gets passed down to your child. But the Rav Dessler doesn't say only that. Even after the child is born, if you work on something, that could still be spiritually passed down to the child. That child will have an easier, you know, dealing with that particular issue that you dealt with. So when somebody goes and somebody, you know, works on a particular trait, let's say guarding your eyes, you're making it for your children easier to guard their eyes. And we only know the world is getting worse and worse and worse. It's not getting any better. You're not having, you know, like a, you know, a modesty, you know, influx of inflation of modesty all of a sudden. It's getting worse. And if it's difficult now, think of how difficult it's going to be for your children. Don't you want your children? No one wants their children to be, you know, straying after their eyes. So it's very imperative that you go and you focus on yourself now, and that will prevent and help your children. Okay, let's wrap it up with a few more points, and we'll close it for the night. Open up for questions. So the Rambam says that when a person learns Torah, the you know, your heart can only occupy thought. You can only have one thought at one time. So when the more that you're learning Torah, the more that you have the problem, these thoughts, they don't, you know, they don't stick to you. The Rav Sol Salanter also says that it's very important. I hold very strongly of this. If you have a particular problem, learn a lot about that problem. Learn a lot about that particular transgression. Because when you learn a lot about it, your character will gradually change, and eventually the sin is going to be distant from you. And I say this on all aspects. If someone has, let's say, a hard time with pride or anger, learn a lot about what the Torah says about anger. Eventually, it's going to build you. If you have a big problem on guarding your eyes, learn a lot about guarding your eyes. Learn everything that you possibly can. If you have a problem wasting seed, learn everything that you possibly can on that topic, and it will help. The other things that, just like it's bad to look at bad things, it's also good to look at good things. And here's some good things that you could look at. You look at a righteous person. The face of a righteous person shines, and it imbues you with holiness. That's why it's sometimes if you go to Israel, you get to see these big Talmid Chacham, you go to Rabbi Shteinman, you go to Rabbi, you know, Chaim Kanievsky, you see these big Gdolim. Just to go and see them and look at their face is already worth it. The number two is when the Sefer Torah is raised, you know, after the Kriyat Torah, the Sfaradim do it beforehand. So you look at the words, you gaze over there. That's also helpful for the eyes. You should also, what's also benefit is to look on the shin, on the Tefillin Shel Rosh, it has a shin on each side. Look at that. That's also beneficial. Looking, Evan Ezra says, also looking at water is also good for the eyes. Looking at heavens also good for the eyes. When you say Kriyat Shema and Shacharit, you also look at your tzitzit, and when you. And also, that when you say "Uri Dimoto," you're supposed to pass it over your eyes and then you kiss it. The Be'er Tev says when you bring the tzitzit to your eyes, that's a skula that you should never lose your eyesight. Also, very very important. And that's why, you know, I'm Ashkenaz and I do that. Usually Sfaradim only do that, but I pass it over the eyes. No. After you just pass the tzitzit over the eyes and you look at the eyes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. When the it's also the tzitzit, we don't have time, there's a very amazing story with the tzitzit, but tzitzit has a very, very strong power to guard your eyes. So if you have, you know, look at the tzitzit three times a day, a few times a day is also very important. When you say Kiddush on Shabbat, look at the candles. It's also very good for the eyes. Whenever you leave the house, you should look at the mezuzah and kiss it. It's also very good. Also looking at God's four-letter name, Yudke and then Vavke. You look at that, you know, Shiviti Hashem Lenegdi Tami, I place God in front of me all the time. It's something very important. You look at that also helps it. And obviously, you should be really the first one studying the Torah. Looking at the words of the Torah also help the eyes, you know, in a significant amount. I want to share with you one thing that for on the Tshuva thing, that I heard this from Rabbi Daniel Gladstein. You have to listen. He had a short thing on Torah Anytime on guarding your eyes, and it's unbelievable. I strongly recommend. He's a phenomenal speaker also. If you guys, you know, like, I strongly recommend listening to him. So he explains like this. He explains that, I don't know, I think he brings it from the Darkei Tshuva, he quoted. So the Rambam says, brings down, there's four levels of Tshuva. That's just, there's different sins that you need to do different things. So like sometimes, if you do a sin, all you need to do, you did, for example, you violate a mitzvah say, you didn't do a mitzvah say, you did tshuva on that, the second you get up, you get forgiven. It's all clean for you. However, there are some things, if you do a negative commandment, then you have to do tshuva, and you have to wait for Yom Kippur. There's other things you have to do, tshuva, Yom Kippur, and suffering. There's other things, like Chilul Hashem, you have to do tshuva, Yom Kippur, suffering, and the day of death. He says, but there's something that, there are people that are considered dead. What is a person, who is a person that's considered dead? We said before, a blind person. Somebody who is blind is considered as if he is dead. So now, if a blind person is considered dead, what about someone who can see but makes himself not see? Which means, is you're walking in the street, you're about to look at something that you should not and ought not to look at, and you prevent yourself from seeing. That's even greater than that. So what you're considered, you made yourself like almost like a blind person because you're preventing yourself from looking. You're going to say, what do we say that somebody who goes and dies? It's an atonement. Death is an atonement. So when you're preventing from looking at things that you're not supposed to be looking at, you're considered like a blind person for that particular time frame, and you are forgiven for your sins. It has the strength to forgive you for your sins as if death. It's such a tremendous tremendous power that this has. The Shem Yishmol brings down, it says, you know, there's two ways to become a righteous person. One is learn and learn and learn and learn and learn and get a tzaddik. Number two is you overcome it by a great temptation, you overcome it and you pass it. That is a way to get to righteousness. It has such tremendous power. I have to mention, this is so important, that if, let's say, you're going in the street, and I'll give you some tips, and we'll finish with this, some tips that you could do to overcome these things. If you're walking in the street and there's a woman that's coming in there and she's not modestly dressed, so you're trying to not look, the best thing that you could do at that point is first of all, you should know that when you're not looking, you're overcome the temptation. You have a very, very strong power, a power of prayer. So right then and there, when you're not looking, start praying. Just speak to God. God, please, can I have X, Y, and Z? Whatever it is. Just speak to God. Now, this works twofold. Number one, you get a tremendous power player. Number two, your mind is that thought. We said when your mind is thinking about one thing, you're not thinking about something else because your mind only occupies one thought at one time. So when you're doing that, when you're thinking about praying to God, the woman's walking past by you, and as you're saying your prayer, she's already passed, and that's it. And you got yourself, a very strong prayer, and you passed that test. Another thing is very important is push off. You're walking out on the street. Say, for the next two blocks, I'm not looking. Push it off. Give yourself something. I didn't have time to do it anymore, but what I used to do to a small group of guys is, we had maybe it was about 15 people in this group, and randomly, throughout the day, I would send, guard your eyes begins now for the next 15 minutes. Which means is, no matter what you're doing, it begins right now. And if you're watching a TV show, that stops. 15 minutes, you're pausing it. You're in the street, you want to look, 15 minutes, you're pausing it from whenever you see that text. So if somebody wants to pick it up again, whoever's there, I think that's a great idea. They should do that with their friends. I think it works really well. Because the second you see it, okay, 15 minutes you could do. 15 minutes you could do. And it really helped, it really helped a lot of people. You're going over there, and you're walking in the street, and I had one guy who said, send it right now. He sends me a text. So, I send a text, and I'm like, why? He says a bunch of guys just went to the beach, So I sent it, but it really does, it does help you. When you realize, because what happens is that you're going in the street, you think, okay, there's no way that I could do it. But all of a sudden you're like, oh wait, 15 minutes, I could do it. Well, 15 minutes, okay, you're not a pervert, I get a whole basil back for 15 minutes. So you go for 15 minutes and then you realize you slowly build it up. The easiest thing, you step out of your house, for the next, let's say walking 10 blocks, 5 blocks, until I get to here, I'm looking down. That's very doable, very easy, and very, very productive. After that, you deal with it then. The idea is that you keep on pushing off the sin. If you keep on pushing off the sin, you're doing the same tactic that the evil inclination does. And we spoke about this many times before, but I think it's extremely important that the evil inclination says, okay, check out this website. It's going to be sick. It's going to be awesome. You're going to love it. It's going to be crazy. And you're like, 5 minutes. Just like when you wake up in the morning and the Satan says, yeah, just 5 minutes, and you'll get out of bed. The same idea, you keep on pushing it off, and eventually the more that you push it off, the slower, the easier that it will be to overcome. And lastly, we have to realize that when we are getting tested with these things, these are opportunity for growth. These are tremendous opportunity. When you get overcome by these types of tests of looking at things that you ought not to look at, and you overcome it, the growth that you get over here is unbelievable. It's really unbelievable. And you're never going to, if you're not actively working on it, it's not something that's going to happen. I strongly recommend, this is something that everybody, we all need to actively work on it. Every single day is another day, it's another struggle. You have to work on it. If you don't work on it, nothing's going to happen. You're not going to succeed in this. It's something that you have to take in your mind, filters or whatever it is, that I'm telling you, the easiest thing that you need to do is start doing it a few minutes a day. Start doing it a few minutes a day, you realize that it's so doable and it'll become easier and you'll see your life will change. And Bezat Hashem, when you do find your wife, or if you're married already, you'll find your wife extremely, extremely attractive, and she'll always be more beautiful and prettier. And Bezat Hashem will have this world and the next world to celebrate with happiness and joy and not get sucked into this terrible, terrible sin. Chas v'shalom. Any questions? Yes.
I have a question. I don't want to be rude or mean or anything. It's a personal question I have from the bottom of my heart.
Yeah.
If you have a filter, right? Could the filter, in a sense, be the Yetzirah's way of saying, keep me? No, look.
I'll tell you like this. Because many people, you tell them you can't have internet, many people, not all of them, some people are able to go on to them. You tell them many people, they're gonna be like, not a chance, I'm not doing it. But if you tell them, okay, listen, but have a filter.
Slowly.
So have a filter is like, okay, so you need internet for business or for school or whatever it is that you need it for. Then you're like, okay, fine. Then if you have that, it's fine. But let's say that there's somebody who can't have a filter. Whatever it is, really that's no answer. But let's say they say they can't have a filter. They could have a web chaver. Send it to your local Orthodox rabbi, somebody you hold very high of, a list of all. It has to be that somebody that you'll feel bad when he sees you. If somebody doesn't know you, I'll be like, hey, you want to take? Like, it's not going to make a difference. Yeah, it's not going to make any difference. It has to be somebody you respect. Somebody you'll feel really bad if they do that. If they see what you looked at. So it's something that is very, very important. And anybody should, you know, needs to do that. You have to take fences for these things. Just like the power of you know, of so much bad that could come from this sin. Think about the power of good. You have the You'll go visit any of the Buchatzera, the big rabbis in Israel that come from the line of the Baba Sali. They're very, very particular about guarding your eyes. I remember I used to go to them when I was younger. My father used to always give me them. They always used to come. You wouldn't even see their eyes. They would see men. They would only see men. But still, the talit till 3 a.m. talit. They go over here, all the way to the eye. You don't see them. You don't see their face. Their eyes are always covered. They're always very particular on right. What. Yeah, that's a Baba Sali.
You cannot almost see an inch of his skin, aside from his face. Yeah, his face, nothing.
You're talking about this tremendous, tremendous, tremendous spiritual growth that happens there. Somebody that's not able to learn. If you guard your eyes, you will guarantee see a difference. You will see a difference. The world is going to open up for you. There's so much power in the eyes. There's so much power and there's so much blessing in the eyes. I can't emphasize that enough. I don't feel like I did justification for this because this is, you know, there's so much to say on this and it's so important to say this. But at least take this to heart that it is so, so important. It will change your life in this world and in the next world. It's going to make your life better here and there. It's going to make your marriage better here and also over there. So there's one more point that I do want to mention is, you know, there's, if let's say, you know, the severity of this is, let's say somebody is going to, is with their spouse and they think about somebody else that's not their spouse, there is a level of illegitimacy in that child. That child is not conceived from the holiness that's supposed to. And unfortunately, if you're going and you're looking at things that you're not supposed to be looking at, and, you know, these thoughts are going to creep into your head, that's going to take a very strong effect on your child. And we see that also by the fallen angels. Over there, the woman, even the woman that didn't have any relations with those angels, but they thought of those angels, the children came up as giants. The thought that you have when you're intimate with your wife has an effect on the baby. And this is the power of it. You looked at something, you had a thought about it, and it affects the child. This is so important. This is why, for women also, women are very, they see an image, they get attached to that image, and they could come out. So if a woman has a thought of that besides her husband, it's a very, very serious problem. And if a man has it when he's with his wife of another woman, it's also a very, very serious problem. This is why it is very, very important that you keep this area very, very holy. And it's going to make that all the more so for the children and also all the more so for the marriage. Thank you for that. I apologize. I should have said that earlier. Anything else? Nothing? Sure. Okay, good. Okay, chazak v'ruch.
You've just experienced another Torah class brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.